So, if you're expecting some kind of slide presentation that's going to be whiz bang cool, this is basically just storytelling. If that's going to put you to sleep at 8 in the morning, you might want to find a different talk with more visuals. But the stories are pretty good, I think. So, just so you know. Guess we can start. It's 8 o'clock. Thank you all for being here. Like I was saying a minute ago, I'm just happy I'm here at 8 in the morning, let alone other people. My name is Amitai Schleyer. I'm a development coach with Pillar. And I got into this role because I care about developing software and about developing humans. And the last time that I was in a situation where I was responsible for delivering working software, I did a good job, but it really hurt, and it kept hurting. And I got to where I couldn't do it anymore, not under those conditions, not in that place. And the upside of that is that I learned a lot in the process, and I have a lot of sympathy and empathy for people who are still in that situation, and I wanted to use what I learned to help people who might be hurting as I had been hurting. So this talk is some stories from that last job where I tried to do good work and sometimes succeeded, and often found that painful. So here we go. Story number one, keeping my job. That implies that it was perhaps going to be lost, right? So I got hired out of college the second time as a 30-year-old that finally graduated with a music degree. Super useful. And I was lucky. This was in 2009, so there had been kind of the market wasn't doing so well, jobs weren't so easy to find. I was lucky that I knew some people who were working at a big bank. It was a big dumb bank. It wasn't one of those banks that sponsors lean or agile conferences. It wasn't a bank that was trying to get better at how it developed software. It was a big dumb bank that was project oriented, and software was not really any different as far as they were concerned. But I was lucky that I got hired at all because I needed a job, and after about 6 months of living in a friend's apartment that was under construction, I finally got a job. This was in New York, so everything's expensive. I was really, at my wit's end, and this is the job that I was offered, so I took it. I never would have imagined that I would be working at a huge company that's multinational and thousands and thousands and thousands of people, and it was in IT security, which I knew next to nothing about. So immediately getting in there, and I hadn't been doing software development for the 4 years that I was in school getting a music degree, and I hadn't actually been doing software development for 5 or 6 years before that either. I had been doing other IT management sort of stuff. And so my first thought getting in there is, I'm not totally sure that I'm going to be able to keep succeeding at this. So the piece of software that I was hired in to work on was a proof of concept in the IT security infrastructure that my two friends, who I knew from NetBSD, which is an open source operating system, they had thrown it together over a weekend with a lot of alcohol in one of their apartments. It was written in Perl. There was a lot of copying and pasting involved, but it was a proof of concept, and it worked really well. And all of a sudden, all the other combinations of computing platform, business unit, operating system throughout this kind of federated company were interested in having this proof of concept extended for their situation. And there were lots and lots of situations. It was easily like a 5-year pile of work. And they said, well, these people were world-leading experts in Kerberos, which is an authentication infrastructure that I now know a tiny bit about, just a little. And they didn't want their lives to consist of managing this software project that they had been so generous as to write in the first place, just because it went well. And so they thought, well, who do we know that we think can possibly make good decisions about this kind of a product and develop it, and that we could hand it off to? Amitai is probably not going to get any other job offers. Let's have him do it. And so they hired me, and I said yes, because again, I was in a hole. And the thing that this software did, it was managing identities. And so if you're in a big bank that's very concerned about separating dev and QA and prod and who has access to which, even when you're developing in dev, you don't want to be developing network applications that run as your own developer ID. When you have an authentication infrastructure as detailed as Kerberos, you want, you know, you want pretty exact reporting on who connected to what as what, and then give them permissions according to that. So even in dev, developing an application in-house, which they did a lot of, you want to have kind of role IDs or application-specific IDs, and ideally you want to have one for dev and one for prod and one for QA and whatever other roles you have in between, and you give them permissions sort of in parallel, and the devs would have access to the dev one and so on and so forth. So there wasn't really a good process at this company for making or managing those IDs. What they had was, depending on the business unit you were in and depending on the computing platform that you were calling on, if you could find the phone number for that help desk, if they had a procedure that was documented, if they could follow it accurately, within 3 weeks you might have a mostly correct ID for one environment. Maybe. So the upshot of that is, if it's super frustrating to jump through those hoops and then not even necessarily succeed at the end of it, then the net effect is that you are not encouraging the thousands of developers at this company to follow the practices that are the best ones. And you can't get, you know, 6, 8, 10,000 people to go through a dumb process just by trying to force them to. You have to make it easier for them to do the right thing than the wrong thing, which was the point of this software. So what my friends came up with in that drunken weekend was that, because they were responsible for Kerberos and they had sort of global root access on all the Unix machines, and they knew that platform really well, they did a proof of concept for that. At the end of which, you could run a command line tool that would make you one of these IDs. We called it PROID, process ID or something like that, and it would be owned by you. And then you could also do things like update it, which was unheard of, because in the old world with the manual process, if you call up 6 months later and say, I need some properties of the ID changed, there is no record of who is the person who's allowed to change it, because they don't even know who owns it. It might not even be in their ticket system anymore. And so what winds up happening is, if you need to change one of those IDs, you basically need to find a managing director who's going to be willing to approve whatever dumb little change you're going to make. Again, I'm not going to do that. But with this command line tool, because it did track the ownership, because it had your Kerberized ID when you created the ID instantaneously, you also had the ability to change it instantaneously. So this is why everybody on all the other platforms and all the other business units wanted this, because it made their lives easier. So my first task, finally getting to keeping my job, my first task when I came in as a freshly minted music major was, so these IDs, now that they could be created and managed, it's conceivable that when an in-house application reaches the end of its life cycle, you might want to turn off the ID so that it's not, you know, a security surface to be attacked. For various reasons that were pretty dumb, we didn't want to delete the IDs, we just wanted to mark them as disabled. So that was my first assignment. It was add the disable command to our command line tool. And I thought I knew exactly how to do that. So we had a command line client, we had a server, both written in Perl. Again, I hadn't written software in probably 7 or 8 years, seriously. And this was a weekend job, you could really tell. And they had had the foresight to know that in the database schema that they provided, and the database was SQLite, this was really a, let's see if this even works. The database schema had provision for, someday we're going to want to disable this, and we're going to want to ask people the reason why they're doing that when they do that. And so the fields were already in there. There was a Boolean disabled, there was a string disabled reason. No worries. So I thought, I don't even have to figure out how to change the schema of this thing. I just have to figure out how to add a server-side command and a client-side command and do the marshalling and unmarshalling like everybody else in this program does. And I copied and pasted, and I got that to work. And then I had the insight just before I was going to go and get it reviewed. And I said, I bet now that it is possible for IDs in our database to be in the state where disabled is one, a lot of the other commands maybe don't want to operate on IDs that are disabled, or maybe operate differently on IDs that are disabled. Uh-huh, that's right. Good catch. And so I went through and, you know, updated the SQL for the other ones as best I could based on my limited understanding of the domain, which was really limited. Like the the subcommands for the Proid command were create, which makes sense, but also insert, which is different. Assert, which is when there was an ID that was imported from before there was ownership, and somebody wanted to say, well, this one's mine, and I want to have it. But then there was a week waiting period where someone else could dispute that, because, again, there was no ownership. And if you wanted to accelerate that, there was something called accuse, which sounded scary, because I didn't understand this workflow yet. And then there were aspects of this tool that I couldn't test at all, because my friends who had written it wrote it with the assumption that they had root access, and some of the integration points, which were not well abstracted, required local root access, which I didn't have and probably, well, didn't want to have and definitely should not have had. So certain aspects of it I just couldn't test. So I was really relying on code review by the guys that at least I was lucky were still there that knew what it was. And so they looked over my changes to the new feature, disable, and to the other features that might be affected by disable, and I said, yeah, looks pretty good. Let's put it in production. I guess they trusted me. And that did not go super well. It did go super well in the sense that my new feature worked right. Can you guess the way that it did not go super well? Regression. Yes. Nailed it. And some of them were terrible. Like, some of the SQL syntax was just not valid. It was that bad. Like, I hadn't programmed in a long time, and I had no way to exercise some of these paths. And so we immediately had to go, as soon as we saw these problems, because users were reporting them and operations was yelling at me, and rightly so, we had to do an emergency fix and release on a Tuesday, which is not normally when you're supposed to do stuff. And it was really easy to find and fix all of them, because they were all stupid in roughly the same way. And then when that was done, and we were with the new feature working well, and the old feature is not broken anymore as far as we could tell, I went to my manager, my friend also, his name was Bill. I said, Bill, if you want me to not screw up in production like that again, then I think that I need to be doing test-driven development. I don't know if our company cares about that. I don't know if you care about that. I'm going to need that, or I'm not going to survive here. And he said, to his credit, do whatever you think you need to do, so that this doesn't happen again. So that was step one, was that I was asked to do this really simple thing, and I screwed it up, and I lost the trust of my manager. But I had an idea for what to do about it. So I mentioned when I came in, this was super copy pasta code, and there was a lot of repeated stuff. And there was actually a really nice architecture underneath this bad application, which was two things that these guys had written themselves. Because, again, they were world-leading experts on Kerberos and pretty good programmers to boot. And what they had done is give me a nice set of layers, of which our application was the third. But the first one was, if you've heard of Netcat, they took something inspired by that and wrote from scratch a Kerberized version of Netcat so that you had a mutually authenticated connection. You could write a shell script as your server that checks an environment variable to see what the client user is and either do something or not do something accordingly. It was that easy. So that was sort of the lowest level. On top of that, they wrote in Perl some libraries called Simple Secure Protocol, which is now called Charon in keeping with the Kerberos mythology, that you give it an object or class in Perl, and you say which methods you want to be exported. And it produces an SMTP-like protocol running on top of Kerberized Netcat, where you know the method names are verbs and the parameters get turned into marshaled and unmarshaled parameters. And they had written a second version of this library that did a lot more of that work for you. And my old application wasn't using that yet. So I thought, I'm in a good situation here. I need to get this code to where it can be testable. Right now it's not very testable. Partly because I don't have root and some of the stuff seems to require that, partly because I don't even know what to expect from how this code is supposed to work, I don't understand the domain language yet, etc. But I was lucky because these two experts on the domain and the code itself were still there. And so I basically paired with one of them for a couple months, doing some refactoring and some other stuff that also helped, so that we were porting onto this new layer of SSP2 and made pretty sure by doing it in a small set of changes at a time, that there were no regressions manually, and then my friend, because he did have root, could sort of double check us. And so at the end of that porting effort, we had code that was testable, and he put together the beginning of just some really basic end-to-end functional tests, which suddenly helped me understand a lot more about this program and the domain. So having done that, now it is testable. Now I have a place to put new tests that I can run. We had an annoying request come in. This was really common at a big dumb bank, that most requests come in the form of annoying requests. And in fact, this one wasn't even really a request. This one came to Bill, who was the product manager. And it was somebody higher up that he tried to say no, because this feature was dumb. It wasn't going to do... it wasn't going to serve the purpose that it was claimed to serve, and there was no other purpose it could possibly serve. It wasn't built on an understanding of the behavior that it was going to induce in users. It was trying to get them to self-report some information that could then be used to ding them to change their behavior. And surprisingly, after years of this feature being in production, we got very few self-reports. But so at the time, we didn't have that data, and we just had our opinion, and our opinion was overruled. And Bill said, "I'm really sorry. This feature sucks. We have to do it. And I don't even really understand, like, the semantics of it are going to be pretty weird because it doesn't fit nicely with the schema that we currently have. Another reason that it's dumb." So I said, "Tell you what." And this was on a Friday. Right. So the release schedule at a company like this, a global banking kind of a company, is that you only get to release on a regular schedule on Friday nights. Because, not because they want you to have a terrible life, although that's probably in there too, but because if you screw up on Friday night, then you have the maximum work window before Hong Kong opens for business on Sunday. That's the kind of thing they're concerned about. So you only get to have a release on Friday, and you only get to have a release on Friday that you have frozen and had vetted by whoever wants to possibly veto it at least a week in advance. I'll come back to that. But so this was the Friday of a scheduled release, and Bill had been called the previous day and failed to push this feature out, and if at all possible, he wanted it in the release that day. I said, "Tell you what, come back in an hour and a half, and I will have some test cases that I think cover all the edges of this weird behavior that we both agree doesn't make any sense and shouldn't be in this application, but we have to. And you'll come back and review the test cases and tell me if I've understood it right, if you think that is the way that it should work, if it really has to work." And so I did, and he came back, and because, again, he was a programmer, he was able to read it and agree that that was the way that it needed to work. And then 45 minutes later, the tests were passing, and the other tests were passing, and nothing was broken, and we shipped it that day. And I will remember what he said to me for the rest of my life. He said, "I don't think I have the discipline to write tests first. But I'm really glad you do." That was kind of an eye-opening moment for me in my career. So the trust that I had lost, I regained. Story number three is about deadline pressure. So having refactored to use our nice new set of libraries for taking a class and exporting it with a network protocol over Kerberos, so far, again, we had just the proof of concept of if you were developing on Unix for Unix and you had access to Unix command line tools and you wanted to make an ID that was going to be in the Unix-specific Kerberos space, then we had you covered. But that's the only combination of many that we had covered. And there were going to be many more that we wanted to add. And the first one was mainframe, which I knew nothing about. I still know almost nothing about. But there were... So we had a couple problems. One was that there were a bunch of hard-coded assumptions that weren't even necessarily explicit. Some of them were implicit, just assuming about the platform that we currently had. So in the places where it said a particular Kerberos realm after the at symbol, okay, then I need some kind of a case or an if statement to handle that, and then put a second one. But in the cases where I didn't say that and then silently did something assuming that, we just had to hope that we found all those. And once we ported to our first other platform, it was going to be easier to port to more of them. But this was the first one. And we had a week and a half. I don't know why, but we did. And I basically said, I'm not convinced that this is possible to do at all in the time that we have, let alone safely. We had to try. So I said, I'm going to be working from home every day for the next week and a half so that I can employ my strategic napping techniques. And so I can work around the clock, except for when I really have to stop because I'm being ineffective. And every day around midnight, I'm going to report what I did that day and what I'm going to have to do the next day if we're still going to have a chance. So at this point, if you've ever developed software before, you can tell that we are probably doomed, because if every day you have to do just enough to still have a chance, and there's a string of days in succession where that's true, probability is not on your side. But we kept at it, and we got to where it was the Thursday before the Friday, and we were close. And I did have a teammate at that point who had been in discussions with the mainframe people about the platform-specific stuff that we needed to encode into our software. And so I did go into the office that day, and we paired up, and I wrote some tests indicating my understanding of what he had gleaned from those conversations. And we fixed a couple of mistakes in my expectations, and then I went and made those pass, and then we shipped that a week and a half after we were asked to do it. And there was one tiny thing that broke that was an obvious mistake in a refactoring that I had done that I had kind of a twinge as I was doing it, like, I'm not totally sure that's going to be right, and I'm not totally sure I'm going to be able to check that. But it was quick to fix kind of on the fly on Friday night while they were deploying it. And then I was able to add an integration test for that other client that I had forgotten existed that would have exercised that code path. And miraculously, there was never any serious problem. We did discover, I think a couple of months later, that there was, so when you try to create one of these IDs and then for various reasons other systems can't do their part, we want to roll back to the initial state before we return to the client. And one of the ways that we might roll back was a SQL delete statement with a where clause. And there was a where clause that didn't specify the Kerberos realm, which would have been fine when there was only one, but when there's more than one and you can have the same name in different realms, might have been eagerly deleting some things that we didn't intend. We lucked out there because we discovered that months later, and we looked at the logs and the data and discovered, as far as we could tell, nothing serious happened. Whew. But I mean, like, we didn't deserve to succeed about that, right? We just did. But so the net effect of that is that with my effort and with a little luck and a lot of manual testing, but because we had done the refactoring we'd done before, it was possible to kind of cope with this crazy workload, and the fact that we couldn't automatically test all this stuff. And a little bit of luck, we were able to succeed at something that probably should not have been able to work. And so I actually earned more trust than I had to begin with, and some of that was totally undeserved, because, again, we probably should have failed. So far, the theme here is that I came in, I screwed up. I figured out something that might help me screw up less. And so far, what's happening here is sort of an increasing realm of what test-driven development, that was really the only thing we were focused on was test-driven development, what that helped us screw up less. So at this point, we had the development engineering team, we had the operations team, and there was a strict separation between the two, because this is a bank. And so we write the stuff but can't deploy it, and they deploy the stuff but can't write it. And they don't have any visibility into our development process, and we don't have any visibility into their operations process. But on those Friday nights when we're releasing, we have to work together about it. So we had at this point gotten some trust from the operations team because we had a growing set of tests, and every time we had a release coming, we would send the operations team the test results, which, if there are thousands of them, they're not going to read them all, but they could see that the number was increasing, and I guess that made them feel better. And they also saw that we were confident. So they didn't totally understand the reasons for that, but they were willing to believe that we did. But we got to where there was going to be a release on a Friday night. I don't even remember what the value in it was, but there was some. And my coworker unnecessarily put in an all-nighter the Thursday night to try to get one more thing in that he really wanted to get in. There was no need for it, but he did, and he was really diligent, and that was maybe one of his primary strengths as a teammate. And so when it came to pass on Friday that the operations team said, "We are rejecting your release at the last minute, at like 4:30 in the afternoon when I'm ready to have a wasted Friday evening. I said, that's ridiculous. Why are you going to do that? Why is this different from the other times that we've done exactly what we're doing? And they said, because there's a couple lines in the run book that I was supposed to put in there that I hadn't put in there yet, which is true. I figured during the 4 or 5 hours that I'm going to be sitting on the phone, mostly watching them, occasionally correcting them, there would be time to edit a wiki for a few minutes and add those two lines to the run book. But they claimed that they needed that done beforehand. And because I hadn't done it beforehand, the release was rejected. And even if I did it now, the release was rejected. And I got mad, not because that was a dumb reason, although it was, but because I got more animated about the fact that my teammate had really busted his butt and was not going to see the fruits of that effort. And so I kind of got angry at them. I shouldn't say kind of. I got very angry at them. I said, this is some kind of bull material, and forget which kind. And if you really wanted to not have this release, you could tell us the real reason. It would be fair. You could tell us. But it's obviously not the one that you said, because that's bull material. And I realized that I was shooting myself in the foot, getting mad at them. But it was hard to stop. But the upside of not having a release on Friday as expected is that now you have a weekend, all of a sudden. And I had a weekend to think about what I had done and why they had reacted the way that they had reacted. And it was pretty clear to me that they did not trust us. And as soon as I realized that, I also realized it was pretty clear to me that there was no reason why they should have trusted us. We knew the test cases we were writing. We knew what they covered and what they didn't. We knew the kinds of mistakes that we couldn't be making. They had no idea. And so when they saw what little evidence they could see that we hadn't been completely careful about everything, even if it was two lines of wiki documentation, the only thing they could do to react to that was to say, we suspect that what you're doing isn't well thought out. That was all the information they had. And at this point, they had sort of been tentatively allowing us to release on Fridays what we had finished on Fridays, because we had a tiny team. We couldn't afford to do branch management or freeze a week in advance or any of that stuff. And they had tentatively gone along with that, but this was the first time they clearly hadn't. And in retrospect, they had just been kind of tolerating it before. So I had an idea that when I got back on Monday, I would ask the operations manager who had rejected the release, the next time we have a feature that is small that we could work on together, let's pair on it. And I was really hopeful that he'd be willing to do that because I had said some not nice things to him. And to his immense credit, and more than I deserved, he was willing. And it so happened that the release we had rescheduled for the following Friday, a new feature request, a small one, came in on Wednesday. Kind of like happens. And again, this is not the MO of this company, but it seemed to be the MO that we were able to handle and wanted to be able to handle. We had this kind of agility as long as the operations team would help us. And so on Thursday, I got in a conference room with him. He had his own checkout of our code, showed him how to run the tests. They were green. Showed him how to break something, obviously, and get them to be red, put it back. And then we kind of whiteboarded the new feature, which was very simple. And then I talked him through how to add tests for what this feature would look like when it worked right. And it's red. And then walked him through in the code what to change to make that be green. And it was. And I said, so how's that for you? Is that kind of okay? Do you feel pretty good about that? And he said, yeah, it's all right. So I said, just before you commit that, why don't you run the whole test suite? And there was some other stuff that had turned red, which is exactly the mistake that I made on my first feature. And a light bulb went on in his head and in his eyes, and he said, aha, I understand now. We will never have this problem in production. We'll never even have this problem in CI. We found it now. Neither of us would have thought of that regression, but there it was. It wasn't a brittle test. It was a real mistake that we would have made. So we fixed it, and then he committed it. And with his name on that feature that had been committed on Thursday, it went into production on Friday. And for as long as he was the operations manager, we never had any trouble getting our code on Friday, shipped on Friday. And because of that, we were able to get to a monthly release schedule, which, considering that our code was in a big dumb bank and being deployed to Kerberos servers, was as pretty close to continuous delivery as you can get. Yeah. And we knew, like, every month we're going to have a release. So that has some impact. If you know that your code's going to be released soon, then you do it a little bit better the first time. There's no time for it to go badly and then rework it. And then every time you have a release, you can probably remember just about everything that you worked on. And so when you're putting it into production, you can be a little more careful about it. And then it also means in terms of waste and risk. Customers used to have to wait something like a quarter or half a year before the thing they asked for, if we even got to work on it, would go into production. And now we were limited only by our work in progress and our actual natural limits of what we could do. And pretty soon, if we had room to do something, pretty soon somebody could have it. So that was huge. We earned the trust from that operations team because they understood why we had the confidence we did, and now they had it too. Any questions so far? Cool. So there was one situation where we could not test sufficiently before we went into production to be sure that what we were doing was going to work right. And it's because basically some management mistakes is how I would characterize it. We had to change how our database transaction handling worked. And we could test that up to a point, but some of the code was upstream and we didn't have a way to be sure that it would perform, because this was SQLite. SQLite is designed for like one local user at a time and not the basis of a network service. But that's how we were using it. And we were trying to rationalize some old code so that it was simpler and better, but we just had no way to know under a real load how that was going to go. So what we did is to make sure that, even more than normal, that our rollback plan was solid, because that's the only safety that we had. And so we put the stuff in production, and it turned out that it didn't go the way that we thought it was going to go. And because our rollback plan was solid, we used it, and we were safe for that reason. And that was rare, the fact that we rolled back. I think in 4.5 years and something like 30 to 35 monthly releases, that was the one rollback. We didn't have any others, other than my first one. Yes, a big project. There's somebody in this room who knows about this project. So at this point, we were pretty well established as a very small but fairly effective team with an application that was pretty reliable and trustworthy for what it did. And we were just kind of getting the hang of our monthly release cycle which was enabled by TDD. And that monthly release cycle enabled us to look a little more, with a little more discipline, at what we were choosing to work on next, because we had a feedback loop that was a lot faster with customers than we had before. And we were just kind of getting the hang of that with the real basics of Scrum. We were doing the whole thing. We were doing points. We were doing velocity. We had a backlog. I don't think we were even doing sprints at that point. It was real basic. We weren't doing any of that yet. We were just doing test-driven development and getting done whatever we could and shipping it, you know, every 4 or 5 Fridays. And then another request came in that wasn't a request. It was what they call an audit finding, an internal audit finding, and that is highly non-optional to handle. And there was a deadline on it, which I assume was artificial, but again, not negotiable. And for some reason, they were trying to give us this work, even though it didn't totally make sense as part of our software system. It was not an easy extension of what we had already done. I could see in the abstract how it's vaguely the same thing, but it was going to take a lot of work to change what we were doing to handle it. And if at all possible, we wanted to say no. So we tried. And basically the answer was that the alternatives are worse. So you guys do it. Yay. And it might have been impossible. We weren't sure that it was possible. That's part of why we wanted to not do it. And part of why it wasn't going to be possible, maybe, was that we were going to have to handle, I think, 3 orders of magnitudes more records? Maybe 2. Maybe 3. We were in the thousands range, and we had to get up into the millions range. I forget exactly which. We were probably going to get a 3 or 4-fold increase in concurrency from clients. And again, SQLite. Not sure about that. And so the first things first was, can we find out as quickly as possible whether this is even going to scale the way that we want? So we did a spike, and took about 3 weeks, and we determined that there are a couple of performance bottlenecks, but probably for all of them, we have some actions that we can take if we're going to need them. And in general, it seems like it might be okay, which is too bad. We were hoping it wouldn't be, because if we had to change to Postgres or something, that would have been like a clear blocker, and we could have told the business, this isn't going to fit by the deadline, which was 8 months out. You'll have to find some other way to do it, but you have plenty of time to think about how. But we weren't able to tell them that, because what came back from our experiment was that maybe we can succeed. Crap. So then my friend, who was a former thought worker and knew Scrum and XP very well, said we need a project backlog, because this is a project. We can get the scope pretty fixed. We can get pretty early agreement from everybody that's a stakeholder. And we do have one upstream team that we're depending on, so we need to get pretty good clarity from them about the schedule. And we can do just a tiny bit of Scrum, which is the points and the occasional retrospectives about velocity, and just see, you know, how fast do we need to be going, and are we going that fast, and do we still have a chance? And so we made our huge project backlog, and we started working down it, and we checked in after a couple months, and it looked like we were still on schedule. And we checked in after another month or two, and suddenly we were less on schedule, which was not surprising, because the upstream team had started to get in our way. So we had been really generous with them, I would say. We knew exactly the functionality we needed from them, and we provided, with the Kerberized Netcat and Simple Secure Protocol, a client server for them to sort of fill in the blanks, to do what they wanted. And we even gave them some red tests about what we expected those commands to do. And all they had to do was make those tests pass and put that service in production on their end. And then we would call it. So we gave them the API we wanted. We gave them the implementation of the API we wanted. We gave them the tests to prove that they had done it right. And we just gave them sort of blank method bodies to fill in. Right? So you would think that that would induce some cooperation. But what we got instead, because this was a cowboy guy, was can we maybe change the API? And this was months into an 8 month project, and we were on schedule with our burn down until this had started to happen, and we needed to be on schedule with our burn down, is very clear. And also we had already written our code mocking out that interface, assuming they would do what we said, and now he's trying to change it. So we said, thing number one is no, you may not, and thing number two is how can we help you get those tests green that we gave you already. And with a little bit of pressure from a manager, which we were able to use the burn down to get him to intervene, the cowboy got back in his stable and worked the way that we wanted him to, just enough. We did have to make a compromise that because they were having such trouble even meeting the deadline to begin with, the only place this cowboy was implementing his code was in production. And this was like the firm-wide database system. This was Sybase. And it seemed like he had none of the careful characteristics that you would want, you know, a DBA kind of person with that level of access to have. But that was kind of their problem, mainly. Our problem was going to be at some point, if we ever want to change how we interact with this stuff, we're going to want a parallel copy and non-prod. But for now, if they're having enough trouble, we'll cope with their developing it in prod. So we did. And we got back on schedule with our burn down. We had a few weeks of work at the end that we had already agreed could be descoped if we had to, and we had to. But everything else that was in that backlog that we defined at the beginning got done at the end. And we always knew where we were. And our release was done a few minutes before the deadline. And we were not surprised. We knew we were going to just make it. And we did just make it. And that was due to, again, having started test driving, so that we could have kind of a smooth flow of development, using the feedback from the monthly releases from the trust that we earned to figure out what to work on, and then realizing that if we have some constraints about what we have to get done by when, which we suddenly did, then we need a little bit of Scrum, and using that to our advantage. And all of a sudden, the way that outsiders in the company looked at our work was different. Up until this point, when we had been doing monthly releases with whatever was ready, they might have thought it was interesting that we were somehow delivering work in a way that was very different from the way that people usually did, which was have a fixed scope, guess at a deadline, miss it, but do whatever it takes to get the scope done, and then maybe a week after that, ship it. We were saying whatever's done is going in once a month, which if you've done Agile stuff, that's not crazy, but if you're at a big dumb bank, it is. And so people might have looked at that and said, well, they're not really working at it in a disciplined way. They're kind of doing whatever. But when we delivered a project in 8 months to a deadline, I think they started to react differently because we were suddenly playing the same game that they were playing better than many of them were playing it. And so people started to be very interested in how we were doing what we were doing. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the next story. But for this one, it turns out that our deadline of September 30th, 2011 was not the only deadline on September 30th, 2011 that we were involved with. We had our own, and we were also an upstream tool for someone else that had the same deadline. And they needed some code changes from our application. We didn't have any time. And I knew that the discussions about what's in scope and what are the requirements and what do we have to do would take a long time. And I didn't have any time. We were just barely maybe going to succeed at our thing. But I didn't want to not help. And I did get a generous offer to borrow someone, which normally sets off all of the red flags in my head. Because in order to join a team, at least on the short term and definitely on the long term, and be useful, you have to know a lot of stuff. You have to know the programming language, you have to know the code, you have to know the environment, you have to know the domain, you have to know the culture of the team. And so normally the answer to that is, that's really nice, but it's probably actually going to slow us down. But the particular person that was offered had worked in our department. I knew him well. I trusted him. And so I was trying to figure out if I could figure out what to have this guy do, then I could accept that offer and it would actually help me help them. And then I figured out what to have him do. Again, because we had test cases that were pretty good, and because he knew Perl and could write test cases that were pretty good, and he was an expert in this domain of the other guy's tool that we had to support his deadline, I said, why don't you, Dan, get with you, Murray, and I trust you, don't involve me in these discussions. Tell me when you're done. And what done means is a set of test cases that are failing in my application. And leave out everything you can possibly leave out. Do just enough that I give Murray what he needs. And that's exactly what happened. In a week or two, we had those test cases. I was able to take, I think, 2 or 3 hours in one afternoon and make them pass. And because we're shipping every month, I knew that Murray would have what he needed soon. And he hit his deadline, and we hit our deadline. Which, in a big dumb bank, is one of the best things you can do. And again, if we didn't have a test-driven way to take advantage of Dan's expertise, we would not have been able to help them. But because we did, we could. So I mentioned that when we delivered our project on deadline, and then helped another project deliver on the same deadline, people started to be more interested in how we were doing what we were doing. And they were, I think, hoping that there was some magic, that they could be doing more with less, because it looked like we were doing more with less. We didn't have any QA people. We didn't have any QA phase. Every now and then, somebody from the QA department would call and ask if we needed anything, and I didn't even know what to do with that. Not that it wouldn't help, but I couldn't figure out, we did a lot of exploratory testing. We automated everything we could think of. We didn't have any manual test cases. So when I was offered that, I didn't want to say no, but we did have a graphical interface, and I would say, here's what's new. If you have time, take a look. I don't know, whatever. But it never found anything. It wasn't valuable to us. I don't even know where the offer was coming from. But that wasn't helping us. And we were succeeding without having that. And people wanted to know how. If you're doing this Agile thing and you're shipping whatever you have, how are you not killing your QA team that you don't have? Because something's in there. And they were disappointed by the answer, which was really weird to me. Because the answer was discipline and skill. And they just kind of... We can't scale that. We can't repeat that. That sounds hard. Well, the alternative is harder. But okay. And that was kind of mind-blowing to me. Charles Babbage has a quote, the guy that invented computing, you could say, that somebody asked him, "Pray tell, Mr. Babbage, if you put into the machine wrong figures, does the right answer come out?" And his answer was, "I cannot rightly apprehend the confusion of ideas that could provoke such a question." Yeah, I kind of felt like that. Like, what kind of answer were you hoping for? I knew that, shipping and delivering working software was a hard problem, and so the way that you do that is probably also not easy. But everybody was expecting it to be, and I had totally forgotten about that. So they were disappointed, and I was surprised that they were disappointed, and that disappointed me, and so on and so forth. But there was no secret. So at this point, we were doing pretty well. We had excellent test coverage. To begin with, we had to retrofit a lot of test coverage. So for each new feature we were adding, we had to look back at this legacy code that we had started with and say, is that covered in some way? No, then we have to cover that first, and then we can add the new or maybe change some existing tests and catch up. And after about half a year of that, everything was covered that we needed to be covered. So that had been true for a while. And we had earned the trust of our management. We'd earned the trust of the operations team. We got on this monthly release cycle. We hit a project deadline. We helped another project hit a deadline. Everything's going well, but we were still looking to improve because we thought there was room for it. And what we thought the next level might be is there was the story early on here about a last-minute feature where Bill was asked for that thing that we didn't want to do, but we had to do. He was able to read over those test cases because he had been a programmer, still was a programmer. And they were written in a programming language, but that was fine for him. But we were getting to the point where we wanted to be able to review expectations of what we were about to do with people who weren't programmers. Because we had a lot of people like that. And we could not afford to carry around any manual test cases or any, documentation off to the side that wasn't part of the build. Everything that we did had to be automated and part of the build, or we couldn't afford to have it. We were one, two, and occasionally three people. And we had a backlog that was growing faster by far than we were taking things off the top of it. And so our next idea was, wouldn't it be nice if we could use Cucumber? We could write our examples for at least certain kinds of features in Gherkin, which is an English given when then kind of a language. And we could have that be automated and hooked into our build. And we could review those examples before we got into a feature with stakeholders that weren't as technical as we were used to. There was one problem with that, which is that we didn't know Cucumber at all. And we didn't want to have to learn it with someone at the same time that they were joining us. In fact, we had an offer from QA. This was the first time they made a useful offer. They were willing to lend us someone for, I think it was about a month. And this wasn't a developer, this was a tester person. And I thought that could be great. We could have them help us write better test cases and have us write Cucumber. Let's just figure out Cucumber first so we don't waste their time. And so we had a tiny feature that was actually for the benefit of our operations team, and we used that as the experiment. We hooked in Cucumber to our build. We figured out how to write the same test that we would have written in Perl directly, in the Perl implementation of Cucumber. And we reviewed those with the operations team, even though they could have read Perl, just to say, is this what you meant? If we get this to do what you said, is that right? Yep. And so we have a feature in that code still, I'm sure. It's been a few years since I was there, that the test cases are Cucumber test cases, and that's how that works. And then we were put under new management, which happened a few times while I was there. And the new manager said, "We're not going to be borrowing a QA person." And in addition to that, that investment that you made in this Cucumber tool, whatever it is, so that you can collaborate more effectively with people who aren't technical, we're not going to use that anymore. There's no need for that. So I imagine if you look at that code base today, there are, I don't know, 90, 100,000 Perl test cases and four Cucumber test cases. Because it was just a dead end. And that to me was a huge symptom of the problems in management there, that we had put this effort into improving so that we could deliver the right things faster and sooner. And we had even, we'd put in all the work. Like, now we're ready to reap the benefit And then this manager says, don't bother with that. Not only did it throw away our investment, it kind of threw away our self-motivation also, which by then I was pretty low on. So that was the beginning of the end of my story at that company. And this is the last sub-story. So you probably know, you've probably been managed by or worked for people who haven't done software development themselves. And some of those people are enlightened about what they don't know, and they will let people who know more make the decisions. Some of those people don't realize how much they don't know and what the cost of that is, and they proceed to make the decisions anyway. That sucks. And that over and over again, like we would have periods of time when that wasn't happening to me, and then we would have periods of time when it was a new manager or the conditions were different when it was. And when people who don't understand how software development works intervene roughly and uncarefully in a system of humans that is developing that software, they cause a lot of harm and a lot of pain, and they maybe don't even realize it. And they're causing some for themselves, too, that they may not realize they don't have to. But mainly they cause it for me. So I tried to take away from this experience. First of all, I was lucky, having been a music major, to get a programming job. And I was lucky to not screw it up. And I was lucky to move from that programming role into product management and Scrum mastery. And I was lucky pretty often, considering that this was a big, dumb bank, to have periods of time in which we were able to operate the way that we thought we should. And when that was true, we did everything the business wanted. If you ask anybody at that company what's important to us, it's more value, less cost, no risk. And we were nailing that. But as soon as we told them how we were doing that, they were sad. Yeah. But so, on our own, in a little corner of this inhumane workplace, we created a humane workplace for ourselves. Then most of the time, we were super happy to work with each other. We always had common enemies, that's for sure. And what I took away from that is that, at least for a little while, I don't want to be in a situation where, when I know better what we should be doing, someone else gets to override me. That seems terrible. And that kind of accelerated my change of career from being a developer and a product manager to being a software development coach. And my goal in coaching and consulting is that more of us, more of the time, should have a humane workplace. And that the kind of work that we do offers the possibility, when it's going well, to be less painful and more prideful. And we had moments of that in this job, and I'm looking to help other people who are in those situations do the same. So that's my story.